The left is very quick to accuse those with conservative views of inciting violence. We see this in the media day after day. Joining us now to talk about this is Selwyn Duke.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with the Savage Nation again today. Michael, with the recent killing of late-term abortionist George Tiller by Kansas native Scott Roeder, we're hearing a lot of talk about how the right is responsible for inspiring murder. For instance, Joan Walsh, the editor of leftist news site Salon.com, actually said this, that those of us who are passionately pro-life are culpable in Tiller's death. And the left always plays this game. Any time there's a violent incident perpetrated by someone who could be called a rightist, they blame traditionalists for stoking the fires of hatred. I mean, you can just count on it every single time. Whether it's an attack on an abortion center, a Timothy McVeigh, or, there really aren't all that many, are there? But don't bother ideologues with the facts. Now, Walsh, a woman of mediocre intellect and lacking moral fiber, I mean, get this, she actually called Tiller the baby killer a hero, has been beating this drum hard. In fact, she recently published a piece titled, "Can Right-Wing Hate Talk Lead to Murder?" In it, she actually draws a connection between James von Brunn, the 88-year-old white supremacist who murdered the security guard at the Holocaust Museum, and factual claims by people like Pat Buchanan, Senator Lindsey Graham, and Michael Steele about how white men are being discriminated against nowadays. She actually said, quote, "If I were a marginal, unemployed, angry, racist white man right now, I'd be hearing a lot of mainstream conservative support from my point of view. Can that help create a climate for more violence? I don't know. I hope not, but I don't know." Unquote. No, Walsh doesn't know too much. First, von Brunn isn't a rightist. He's a whitest. That's what I'd call him. In fact, he's the exact opposite of a rightist in many ways. He embraces Adolf Hitler's socialist policies, and he justifies his anti-Semitism with Darwinian theory. He also once wrote, listen to this, quote, "The big lie technique employed by Paul to create the Christian religion also was used to create the Holocaust religion. Christianity and the Holocaust are hoaxes." Unquote.
Well, this probably would come as a shock to someone as ill-informed as Walsh, but I've long said this. Those of us who've actually studied the history of Nazism and the white supremacist movement know that from Adolf Hitler in the 30s to his fellow travelers today, its ranks have always harbored hostility toward Christianity.
No question, Michael. And the reasons are simple. Whether you view Christianity as merely an outgrowth of Judaism or the fulfillment of it, it's the second part of Judeo-Christian. Second, like the ancient Romans, the Nazis viewed the faith of turn the other cheek. And mind you, I have to point out that that counsel is misunderstood, but they viewed it as an influence that diminishes manly virtue. And lastly, a lie and the truth don't have the same address, do they? No, of course not. Now, what white supremacists actually prefer are, not surprisingly, ancient Germanic pagan religions and even, get this, Islam. They even prefer Islam. And just consider Hitler, for instance. Consider his dislike for the heroic Germanic warrior Charles Martel. What was Martel's sin? Well, he had the gall to halt the Muslim advance into Gaul, which is now France, at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD. It's said that Hitler actually told his inner circle that if Martel had failed, the Germanic races would have been converted to the warrior creed of Islam and would have conquered the world. That was his reasoning. And the Nazis' dislike for Christianity was so great that they sought to destroy it. And of course, that's not surprising. Now, leftists scoff at this, but it's now an established fact. And how is this for evidence? There's a Jewish attorney named Julie Seltzer Mandel, a woman whose grandmother was a survivor of the Auschwitz concentration camp. Well, about 7 years ago, while she was editor of the Nuremberg Project for the Rutgers Journal of Law and Religion, she gained access to 148 bound volumes of rare documents created by the OSS, which was the World War II forerunner to the CIA. And in these documents was, get this, a 120-page report titled, quote, "The Nazi Master Plan, The Persecution of the Christian Churches," unquote. The OSS explained how the Nazis planned to destroy Christian churches and replace faith in Jesus with faith in the Third Reich. It's right there in OSS documents. And to this day, nothing has changed. If you examine the writings of contemporary white supremacists, you'll find much hatred for Christianity, affection for paganism, and sympathy for Islam. That's what you'll find.
Hatred for Christianity, affection for paganism, sympathy for Islam. Sounds like the left to me. I mean, remember that those euphemistically named censorship bureaucracies of the left, human rights commissions, blah, 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 consistently silence those who dare criticize Islam, most notably Christians in places such as Canada.
That's absolutely true, Michael. But getting back to von Braun, we can make a similar point. Given that he hated not only Jews, but also George Bush and neocons in general, and he did hate those folks, who is he more reminiscent of, I ask you? Newt Gingrich or maybe Barack Obama's buddy, Reverend Wright? What do you think? And when thinking about this, bear in mind Wright's recent explanation for why Obama won't let him in the White House, when Wright said, quote, "Them Jews ain't gonna let him talk to me," unquote. But now let's return to the matter of the impact of words. The Walshes of the world say that many of us rightists are responsible for inciting violence. Okay. And in response, many on our side will say that there's only one person responsible for an act of violence, the perpetrator, be he Scott Roeder, von Dunn, or someone else. But actually, believe it or not, both perspectives are wrong. In reality, virtually all of us understand that words can seduce. We say the pen is mightier than the sword for a reason. And we treasure freedom of speech not because words are meaningless, but precisely because they're powerful. So, while we're right to deny responsibility for Roeder, it's not because such a thing is impossible in principle. It's just that, in this case, we aren't responsible in the particular. And Walsh is right to imply that such things are possible in principle. However, she's childish in her silly implication that only the right is responsible for them in the particular. Now, of course, it's quite reflexive for a person, I have to say, even a good one, being tarnished by guilt by association, to deny the reality of indirect culpability. And it's also reflexive for dishonorable people, such as Walsh, to cynically seize upon a violent event and use it to tarnish opponents.
Well, but they're engaging in social engineering also, Selwyn. They're also trying to provide a justification for fairness doctrine-like legislation in the near future, and hate speech laws down the road.
Michael, there's no doubt about that. But now, let's try to understand the fallacies here more deeply. And let's start by thinking about all the instances of leftist violence we've seen over the years. Would Muslim convert Carlos Bledsoe have murdered the army recruiter in Arkansas if he hadn't been exposed to the anti-white, anti-Western, and anti-Christian rhetoric that's everywhere today? Huh? What about Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber? Would he have perpetrated his acts had he not been weaned on environmentalist radicalism? Would all the domestic terrorists who firebombed fur stores and vandalized SUVs and research facilities have done so were it not for environmentalism? Would Colin Ferguson have targeted whites in the 1993 Long Island Railroad massacre had he not been assailed with anti-white rhetoric from the Reverend Wrights, Jacksons, and Sharptons of the world, huh? What about that? Now, you can take issue with my examples, but the details aren't the issue. The point is, would we really deny that the indoctrination people are subjected to influences their thinking? I mean, are Palestinians born hating Jews? Do madrasa schoolboys have a gene dictating hatred for the West? Again, words can seduce, let's face it. And this brings us to the crux of the matter. If rightist rhetoric can inspire others to violence just like leftist rhetoric, what determines culpability? Well, we have to ask the only relevant question about that rhetoric. Is it the truth? That's the only relevant question. For instance, you may warn that a new resident in the neighborhood did time in prison for child molestation, and an angry mob may kill him. But did you do wrong? On the other hand, though, it's a different matter if harm befalls someone after you wrongly and maliciously label him a child molester, isn't it? So, any time you sound an alarm, whether it contains the ring of truth or that of lies, it can serve as a call to violent action for some. It can.
That's true, but we can't create a Fahrenheit 451 situation in which ideas are roundly suppressed and people are kept comfortably numb unless we're in Iran or, what, in Obama's America coming soon to a theater near you?
No, Michael. No one wants that, and it wouldn't work anyway. But what's the moral of this story? Well, it's that we all can inspire violence with words, but not all of us speak inspired words. Evil may be done in the name of good or evil, but it's only those who speak evil who have blood on their hands. Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Selwyn Duke, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.